Last night, we had a great trunk or treat here at the building. We had great turnout from our own members and also many from the community who were here that we were able to interact with and get to know a little bit better. So it was a big success. Just thankful for everybody who put that together, organized that, and everybody who participated in it. It was a lot of fun last night. Back in the 1980s, had the opportunity to come to OU's basketball camp for a couple of different years. And for a 13 and 14-year-old kid who lived and breathed sports, it was a big opportunity. It was back when the world seemed really, really big to me. Before the internet, before some of the other things I've been able to experience in life, for a boy growing up in a small town to come to Norman and be able to be involved at least on a small level with the OU basketball team, it was a big deal. And I remember the first time I attended that camp, at the end of the first day, all of the campers, we were gathered together, and we were all asked to sit down, and we all sat down, and here comes Billy Tubbs to address us. I was like, wow, this is the real guy that I've seen on TV. This is Coach Tubbs. And to be able to sit at his feet and just listen to him after all the success that he had had back in the 80s, and many of the basketball players that were on the team at that time, they were there. It was a big deal for me to sit at the feet of Billy Tubbs. Over the past few weeks, we've had the opportunity to sit at the feet of Jesus and listen to him as he talks to us about some great stories, as he shares these stories from Luke chapter 15 with us. And I've tried to imagine what it would be like for the sinners and the tax collectors who were there. Now, we also know the scribes and Pharisees were there, but the sinners and the tax collectors, they chose to come there because they were excited about Christ. Much like I was back when I was 13 and 14 years old at that OU basketball camp, just filled with excitement to be there to listen to Coach Tubbs as he talked to us like we were a part of the OU basketball team. That's how I pictured the tax collectors and the sinners, as they sit here in Luke chapter 15 and listen to Jesus. They listen to the guy that they've heard about. They listen to the one that they know can do miraculous things. And right here he is, right in front of them. They can reach out and touch him. They can hear him with their own ears, see him with their own eyes. What an experience that would be. And the first son that we're introduced to in Luke chapter 15, it's about them. The prodigal is about the sinners and the tax collectors. It's the older son who comes into play later on, who represented the scribes and the Pharisees. But it's this first son that Jesus starts talking about that represents them, represents their life. Jesus is drawing them in. As they listen to Jesus talk about this wayward boy, they know it's them that he's talking about. This is us. Jesus is talking about us. And last week we listened as the son made a horrible request, a disgusting request of his father, wanting his share of the estate. Give me my part. Give me what's supposed to come to me after you pass from this life naturally. I don't want to wait. I want it right now. We listened as that son made that horrible request. And now we come to another part in the story where Jesus, he gets our attention with this phrase, and not many days later. It didn't take the prodigal long to get out of Dodge. Now, he had already mentally and emotionally checked out. He was already done with his father. He was done with his brother. But Jesus shows us that it didn't take long after he got his share of the estate to get out of there. Not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country. And there he squandered his estate with loose living. He's ready to leave. He's ready to go. And you look at the life that he lived, it was a wild life. Prodigal living, loose living. All of those phrases are used by translators to describe what this son did. There were two distinct stages in this boy's rebellion. We looked at phase one last week. The initial rebellion was just the request that he made of his father. Phase two is even worse. It begins with the boy's departure from his family's household and follows his life out into the world. Phase two could be described with this thought: world, here I come. I'm ready. I'm ready to live my life. I'm free. I can do what I want, when I want, how I want. And if there's ever a group of phrases that describe society today, and something that we even battle as Christians, we want to do what we want, we want to do it when we want, and we want to do it how we want. We want that freedom. And that's what this son had. You know, this part of the story culminates in the absolute meltdown of this young man's life. There are always consequences to sin, right? It's always consequences when we leave the Father's house, when we decide to go out on our own, when we decide to live for us, when we adopt that mentality of I'm going to do what I want, when I want, how I want. There's always going to be some consequences. His own lust proved uncontrollable, and he finds himself enslaved in the worst kind of slavery. And what he wanted more than anything was freedom. I want to be free. I don't want the chains anymore. I don't want to be bound here. I want to be free. And he ended up in the worst kind of slavery we could even imagine. He is pulled progressively downward into sin's death spiral until he finds himself left virtually hopeless in the most appalling circumstances. And it all started with this image right here. This is where it began. The father, he was at home. The older brother, he was still there at home. But here goes this young boy, out on his own, free at last. He left. He left the presence of his father. It didn't take long for the real agenda behind the prodigal's defiance to come to light. When he made that request of his father, "Father, I want my share of the estate. Give me my part of the inheritance." He was looking for a way to fund what he wanted to go and do. Just wanted out of there. You know, this phrase here, gathered everything together, it means that the prodigal liquidated all of his assets. The inheritance that he asked for, the inheritance that he received. And that was the part that was so surprising last week. The prodigal asked his father to be cashed out. "Give me my share of the estate." And the father actually did. So whatever a third was, that's what this son got. The older son received 2/3, the younger son 1/3. Whatever that was, whatever possessions that amounted to, whatever animals he received, whatever land he received, he immediately went and liquidated it. He wanted to turn it into cash so that he could go off into the far country, that distant land, and have the money that he needed to live the life he wanted to live. And so that's what he did. That's what Jesus says. He gathered everything together. Now try to think about the father's mindset as all of this was going on. There was a period of time, several days, where this son is just cashing out everything. The land, the possessions, everything that his father had worked so many years to gather together. This son, he's getting rid of it in a few days. And the father is seeing all of this happen. The father is watching as his son is packing everything up, liquidating everything. You know, as we listen to these stories, we can't forget the impact on them with every person, the father, the older brother. Everybody was impacted by the actions of the prodigal. And we know what happened to him, but we also need to see what happened to everybody else surrounding him. Because when we sin, it not only affects us. When we make a decision to leave the Father's side, when we travel off on our own, it's certainly going to affect us. But it's also going to affect a lot of other people as well. And the father, he had to be emotionally drained. As he watched his son liquidate everything, as he watched his son gather everything together, and finally, he watched his son leave. You know, family properties were very important back in the law of Moses. You know, the law of Moses has strict regulations governing the sale of real estate. Land sales in Israel were like long-term leases. Remember that family properties were actually redeemable again in the year of Jubilee. So this son, he cared nothing about that. He didn't care about anybody but himself. He didn't care about his father. He didn't care about the law of Moses. He didn't care about the restrictions that the law put on his actions. He didn't care about any of that. All he cared about was self. Now, if you want a very basic definition of what sin is, if you just want a one-word definition of sin, it's selfishness. It's acting out on our selfish desires. It's doing things that are against God to somehow, in our minds, benefit ourselves. You can sum up sin with that one word. Selfishness. And man, is it on display here with this boy. The haste with which he acted suggested that he lost a tremendous amount of value in this process. He probably received pennies on the dollar. He didn't care about any of that. He just wanted out. Try to look at this from the perspective of the sinners and the tax collectors who were listening to Jesus, because this was the character in this story that represented them. He represented the life that they had been living. And it shows us even today the foolishness of the sinner. Now, the sinner wants to get away from God no matter the future cost. When Satan is tempting us, when we're facing temptation day in and day out, here comes Satan. We're faced off with him. Satan isn't going to show us the future price. He's not going to show us what it's going to cost us down the road. And we're so concerned with right now that we dive into what Satan is offering us. Because the sinner is more concerned with leaving now than he is with what it might cost him in the future. I don't want any accountability to God. I'll sell cheaply all of the good gifts that my Father has given me. I'll squander my spiritual opportunities, my spiritual gifts, and every blessing that God has bestowed on me. I'll turn up my nose at God's goodness, the riches and the mercy, the patience that he's poured out to me. I'm just going to throw all of that aside because I'm concerned about self. Remember, Jesus is telling this parable to Jewish leaders living in a Jewish culture. When Jesus said these words right here, they would instantly understand the implication. Here, this young boy, he takes everything that his father gave him. He liquidates it immediately. A few days later, he takes off on his journey and he travels into a distant country. When Jesus said those words, everybody would know that he's talking about a Gentile land, a foreign land. This young man not only left home, he not only left his family, but he also left his cultural heritage and his faith. This would be another gasp moment in this story. And it was intentional. Have you ever tried to get somebody's attention that just isn't listening to you? And you're wondering, how can I get this person's attention? Maybe it's a child. Maybe it's a teenager. And you're talking and you know they're not listening. And somehow you want to get their attention. Jesus is trying to get the attention of his audience. He wants the sinners and the tax collectors to understand that he's talking about them. He's talking about the lives that they've been living, that they've been wasting their life, wasting their opportunities, living for self instead of living for God. He wants them to know that, so he's trying to grab their attention. Our season just finished down at Whittier Middle School. We have several different coaches on our staff. You know, every coaching staff needs a few yellers. We got a few yellers. They just yell. I'm not a yeller. I don't shout. I just talk quietly most of the time. Most of the time. When I do yell out there, it gets their attention because they're not used to it. And I do that intentionally. One, I think most kids respond better if you just talk to them quietly. But it also provides me an opportunity to get their attention when I need to get their attention. And when I raise my voice, it gets their attention. Like, oh, Coach Johnson's mad. Something's wrong. Because I usually don't get mad. And there's times when I want to get their attention. Jesus wanted to get their attention. And everything that he has shared here in this story, these moments where the Pharisees and the scribes would be like, wow, what a horrific story Jesus is telling. Look at this boy. Look at everything that he's doing. Look at that selfish request. And now he's traveling into a Gentile land. Jesus got their attention. And that's what he wanted to do. And with this one phrase, this one verse, there's so much packed in here that we will just read over and we won't see the significance of it. Jesus is trying to shake the sinner awake. He's trying to get their attention to see their true spiritual condition. Now, it was a lot easier to do that with the sinners and the tax collectors because they came there willingly. It's a little more difficult with the scribes and the Pharisees. But this imagery right here, it's intentional. This son taking his inheritance and just selling it cheaply, selling it for pennies on a dollar. And now traveling into a Gentile land, traveling to this foreign country, everybody here would be just glued to Christ, listening to what he's sharing. He got their attention. It was unthinkable that any Jewish young person would journey by choice into a Gentile land. All of them were thinking, what are you doing? Why would you leave the Father? Why would you leave everything that you have at home and travel into this foreign country, this Gentile country, and willingly live there? Why would you do that? Well, he did it because he wanted to live a wild life. He did it because he wanted to live his life his way. This young man, he was the poster child for everything that the Jewish leaders despised. If they just made a list of everything that they were against, just numbered it 1 through 10, everything that this boy did, it would be on that list. Things that we hate, things that we despise. It's all wrapped up in this one boy. He humiliated his father. He was materialistic, greedy, foolish. And on top of all of that, he travels into a Gentile land to get as far away from everyone as he could so that he could live however he wanted. Jesus, he could not have painted a more revolting picture. There's nothing else he could have done that would have stirred up this crowd the way he did. And you look at the prodigal, and we know the full story. We look at this part of the story, and without a doubt, this is the main villain, right? Here's the bad guy. How could anyone be worse than this? Give him a funeral. That's what the Pharisees wanted. They were just waiting for the father to pronounce his son dead. That's what they were waiting for. This man were on trial. It would be a quick verdict. Wouldn't take long for the jury to come back. Wouldn't take long for that gavel to sound across the courtroom and for the words guilty to be yelled out. Because this was the worst possible sinner. Beyond redemption, beyond hope, he was guilty. And everybody knew it. Now hold this thought in your mind for just a moment. It gets pretty bad here for the prodigal. But believe it or not, it actually gets worse. It gets worse before it gets better. Who knows why he chose to travel where he did? Have you ever taken off on an adventure and you have no purpose, you have no direction, and we're just going to go wherever we go? It's okay to do that if you just want to travel the United States. Let's just see where we end up. Guys, it's never good to do that spiritually. If you're just throwing dust up in the wind and say, let's just see where it lands, and that becomes your life, it's not good to do that spiritually, and that's what this boy did. He had little knowledge of what life would be like when he got to this distant land. He had not considered the dangers that might lurk there. He clearly had no forethought into the consequences of all of this, how difficult it would be to establish a new life. This boy had no clue where he was going, no plans for the future. This is what he was looking for. Now, this was the only thing that was going on in this young man's mind. I want to find some fun. I want to find some pleasure. And he looked at his life back home. He looked at what was going on, surrounded by his father, surrounded by the responsibilities back there. He didn't think it was very much fun. So he went off on a journey to find some fun, to find some pleasure. And he lived it up. He lived a life that many young people make a choice to live, that many adults make a choice to live. You know, the word here for squandered, it literally means to just scatter abroad. Just throwing everything up in the air and seeing where the wind blows it. He just flung his inheritance away with wild living. He wasted his fortune in no time. I wonder how many days he actually spent living the good life he envisioned. You know, he had this life that he dreamt of in his mind. This life that was just going to be unbelievable. Have you ever done that? You think about, wow, this is just going to be amazing. Maybe it's something you're going to purchase. If I can just purchase this truck, if I can just purchase whatever, it's just going to be mind-blowing when I get this. That's what this boy was thinking. You know, he had this life all mapped out in his head. This is just going to be unbelievable. He was sending back Instagram pictures. Hey, everybody, look. Look at the great life I'm living. I wonder how many days it was actually good. Because we know it turned bad pretty quick. But we look at the timetable of his life. He makes a request of his father. Just a few short days later, he travels into the distant country. And it wasn't long until everything turned bad. How many days was it actually good? A week? A month? 6 months? Jesus doesn't tell us. But we know that window. You know, the good life. Don't we hear about that all of the time? I want to live the good life. And when most people talk about the good life, they talk about living however they want. Let's say you make that choice right now. Let's say you're 18 years old. Oh, to be 18. Say you're 18 years old and you make the choice to live the good life. And you get to live to be 80. And for 62 years of your life, you live what you consider to be the good life. You live how you want. And you do it when you want, and you do it how you want. And you live that way for 62 years. The good life. Now compare that to eternity. Just a few short days, isn't it? Anything compared to eternity is just a few short days. If you spend your entire life just indulging any sinful pleasure, any sinful desire that you have, and you do that for your entire life, isn't it just a few short days? You know, sin never delivers what it promises. It never really brings the good life that sinners are looking for. In fact, when people look at those promises concerning sin, you're looking at the wrong promises. Here's the fine print. Here's the small print that Satan doesn't want you to see about sin. The wages of sin is death. Remember that from Romans 6? If you live according to the flesh, you will die. Sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Those are the real promises about sin. And the prodigal was about to discover those truths in a very painful way. Its downfall, it was sudden. It was inevitable. And it's captured right here in verse 14. Now, when he had spent everything that his father had worked for, everything that his father had acquired over a period of years, probably decades, he spent it all. And then what happens next? A severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be impoverished. The language suggests that when the prodigal reached the far country, his fortune was at least partially intact. For a moment, he must have thought, I've finally arrived. I've made it to the top. I've escaped my father. I don't have my brother breathing down my neck. I finally am living the life I've wanted. He spent everything. And most likely what the older brother says later in this story is exactly right. It included prostitutes, wild parties, and other immoral activities. Now, many people would say at this point in the story, when you look at verse 14, a lot of people would say, you know, this boy, he's just getting what he deserves. He's reaping what he sowed. You know, some disasters we bring on ourselves. You know, this son, when he chose to leave his father's side, that was a choice he made. Nobody asked him to leave. Nobody forced him to leave. He voluntarily left the presence of his father. And everything that he encountered after that, we could say was his fault. But this famine wasn't his fault, was it? You know, some disasters we bring on ourselves, others happen with no particular fault of our own. But what an absolutely devastating turn of events. It's like a ton of bricks upside the head. His entire life to this point had been pillowed with comforts he simply took for granted. You know, James, in his prayer earlier this morning, you know, he mentioned how many things we take for granted day in and day out. Maybe for the first time in the life of this young man, he realized what he had taken for granted. I think this was the first time it ever hit him upside the head. Wow, I used to have a good life. The prosperity and relative ease of life at home, it was gone. Up to this point in his life, even with the wild living that he had done, everything that this boy had done up to this point in his life had been funded by his father. Every need, everything that he wanted, had been given to him by his father. Even the life that he lived in the far country to this point, the money that he had acquired, it was from his father. The life of pleasure that this boy sought, it was over. The joy van, it crashed. And we need to pause and reflect on the implications of verse 14. Jesus here is describing a level of desperation far beyond anything that we can comprehend. Now, famines were common enough in Jesus' time that he didn't have to explain the dilemma any further. Everybody listening to what Jesus was saying, they understood what this meant. They understood the level of desperation that this boy was facing. They could relate, and they all knew this. The party, it was over. It was over. The famine was a big-time reality check. Now, just look at this boy's life as some of the different intervals. How would you describe his life before he left home? We had everything that he needed, but he still chose to leave. So how would you describe this boy's life? Restless? Perhaps that's the word. How would you describe his life during the rebellion? When he's out there living the party life, he's out there making it rain, spending the money left and right. How would you describe his life at that point? Maybe empty, hollow. What about at this point? How would you describe the boy's life when he began to be impoverished? The ESV reads, he began to be in need. This is something he never experienced before. This boy had never been in need before this. At home, he needed nothing. Everything was provided for him. Now his life had become a nightmare. He had left behind a fine home, a bright future, a loving, generous father, and he ends up without friends, without family, without money, and without hope. And in his mind at this point, he had nowhere to turn. Now, I want you to think about this for just a moment, because this is really where we need to connect it to our lives. If the prodigal knew how this journey would end, if somebody could have set this young boy down and just kind of flashed through the next several months of his life, and somebody could have shown him, okay, this is what's going to happen to you. You're going to go out. You're going to live this party life. You're going to have all of these friends. You're going to have all of this money. You get to do what you want, when you want, how you want. And he's able to see all of that. But then immediately next, he sees that he's out of money. And then he sees these images of this famine and how desperate his situation is going to become. And then they show a picture of him with the pigs, feeding the pigs, wishing he could eat what he was feeding them. Now, if this boy could see all of that just play out on the screen in front of him, right here on a movie, do you think he would have left? If he would have saw all of this just flash in front of his face, this is what's going to happen when you leave the Father. Do you think he would have left? Now, what are the implications for us? Think about this. Don't we know where the life of sin ends? Don't we know what it's going to produce? Can't we look at this story? Can't we look at other people that we know, people that we're probably close to in this life? Don't we see what happens when we chase this life of sin? We know, don't we? We know how it ends. So why do we keep taking the same journey over and over again? If we know where it ends, if we know how it ends, why do we keep leaving the Father's side? Brings us back where we started. This boy leaving home, leaving his father. What was racing through his mind at this point? Relief? Excitement? Anticipation? A false sense of security? This is what he ultimately learned. It's never a good time to leave the Father's side. Let that thought sink in for just a moment. Many people leave the Father when they head off to college. That's typically what we associate with the prodigal, the young person who finally is able to leave home, finally has the freedom they want to go and do what they want, live how they want. Typically how we associate the prodigal. Now consider the ramifications of this. Some of the most important decisions we make in life are in that age range, from 18 to 22. What happens if we make those decisions away from the Father? Some young families leave the Father after getting married or having children. Consider the impact on your marriage, the impact on your children's spiritual development or lack thereof. Some people, they choose to leave the Father after their children go off to college, as if they fulfilled their responsibilities. When the years start adding up in your ministry, you witness all of this. You see young people leave the Father's side when they go off to college. You see young families leave as they're chasing after sports and other activities. You see older adults leave when their children go off to college. I've seen it all. I've seen all of those scenarios. Here's the bottom line. Life without the Father is miserable. There's never a good time to leave the Father's side. The prodigal, he learned this lesson the hard way. And maybe even as you sit here today, you've wrestled with thoughts. Maybe it's just time to leave. Maybe it's just time to give up. After all, it just seems to be so much work, takes so much effort. It just seems to be such a struggle. Maybe it's time that I try life away from the Father. It's never, please listen, it's never a good time to leave the Father's side. But it's always a good time to come back. And maybe you need to do that this morning. Maybe it's time to come home. Next week, we're going to see the prodigal do that. Maybe you can beat him to it right now. Beat him home. Come home. Come back to God. If we can help you in any way, we invite you to come as we stand.